Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Off the ball, GAA.
Look, personally, I'm absolutely over the moon. Look, I was watching Donald Hughes, Kieran Hughes, Frank Coffey, Donald Morgan, Dermot McCrudden, Nicholas Carrigan. I could name them for hours. These boys soldiered for years, didn't get to play a part in this, but they were playing a part in how we got here today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball daily.
Right then, Hannah Scott is an Olympic champion in rowing. She won gold at the Paris Games last year in the quadruple sculls for Team GB. And I'm very happy to say that she's with us on the line now. Hannah, you're very welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. Getting ready for Christmas. But apart from that, thanks for having me.
What does Christmas look like for you? Is it on the water every single day working hard, or do you get some time off?
We've actually had like a really busy December with a lot of trials and testing. We've got one more week left of training and then I'll get back home for Christmas. But when I'm home, I still have to keep going. I do tend to like do a bit more cross training then and just enjoy like the North Coast. But yeah, when I go home, I do try to get a mental break as well as a physical one, just when you've got a week.
Yeah. Where are you based? Where are you right now?
I'm based outside of London at the minute, outside of West London, so Maidenhead, but I'm from the north coast of Ireland, so Corrien, Giant's Causeway kind of area, love home. It's not got the beach around London, so I'm always a bit sad, but it's nice to get back.
Is down around Maidenhead where Team GB has its rowing set up then, is it near the high performance unit?
Yeah, right. That's why I'm based around here. I'm about a half hour drive every day, but it's around this area, around Henley area. We have our national training centre to then go rowing every single day of my life. So it's okay. Great.
because right on your doorstep in Coleraine, you have Ban Rowing Club, which is where it all starts for you. So I presume the temptation is there, even just for nostalgic reasons, to get back out in the boat. But you're going to try and swerve it when you go back to Ireland?
Yeah, well, we have Boxing Day races at Ban.
Okay.
And every year somehow I manage to swerve it now because people are always thinking I'm keen to get in a boat. But when I get time, I'm trying to keep my sanity. So I do try and avoid it when I can.
Yeah.
I'm joking. But like, it's nice to have like a bit of fun and like go down and like see the club again and like be part of the community. Like that's the bit I do love about rowing. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of just jumping into boats voluntarily at this rate. Like I've seen enough of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It is literally your job. So I think you've done enough of it during the year. So people might have seen a reel that you posted earlier this month on Instagram, Hannah. It's basically an explainer of an identity, of your identity, as somebody who has represented both Ireland and Great Britain, your pride as well in being from Northern Ireland, of Northern Ireland. And you captioned it, "Scary one for me to post. Could spend hours talking about this, but a few minutes will have to do for now." And I must say, looking through the comments, you have navigated these scary and turbulent waters very professionally, very well. I don't suspect there was much blowback at all.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it was a scary one to post, to be honest, because I think, like I was explaining in that reel, it's something I've thought about for a long time, and only now have I almost not felt the courage, but I've just felt it's about time that I say something about like being from Northern Ireland, holding two passports, like Ireland and Great Britain, and how I navigate that. And it's not just as simple as you said, I row for Team GB, but I was like, people probably don't know that I also rowed for Ireland as a junior. And I think that's also an important part of my journey. And it's something that I just thought I'd speak up a little bit on, and maybe just how it's so complicated in sport, where it's not meant to be political, it's not meant to be divided, but as professional athletes, and Northern Ireland go to the top, they're kind of forced to choose, and that then becomes political again. And it's just a really interesting perspective to have, I guess, and I wanted to maybe just speak about it a little and just kind of tell people that I think about it a lot more than maybe people understand.
Was there a build-up of noise on the subject around you specifically?
Always, it was after the Olympics, I think. I did kind of notice that there was kind of a build up on one side of just like, oh, like she's always just represented Great Britain. And I was like, well, no, like I have all my friends in Rowan Ireland. I'm still friends with everyone there. And like, it's more than just like me representing Team GB. I don't feel like that's like a fair thing to say. I guess I represent them in terms of with the flag, but the community I'm representing is my whole home, my whole town. And I don't want that to just be kind of missed at points, I guess. And that's kind of why I thought it was about time I said something on it.
Because it's something that we've seen on a number of different occasions over the past couple of years, that there is evidence and there's like been people who've spoken so well about the subject, about the complicated nature of where they're from or what their national identity is. And it feels that sport often brings us to the very sharp end of this. So take us back to representing Ireland then. You represent Ireland as a junior. At what point does this start to become either a tug of war or something where you have to make a decision between what team you're actually going to represent in the water?
I think, well, as a junior, so obviously I was at home. So naturally I was competing at the Irish Championships every year. I was trialing for Ireland. And that was just because when I'm at home, that's what we would do. Like the rowing club went down to the Irish Championships every year. It would be our main event we target. And like I said, yeah, through my junior rowing career, I represented Ireland at Coupe de la Genève, which is like basically the junior European Championships. And then the following years, I was still rowing at the Irish Rowing Championships. And I've always been very proud of that, because that was definitely part of my rowing and my journey, was the Irish champs every year. Still probably the most nervous I've ever been for races. And I think, yeah, from that point, when I went to the States, that was not very common at the time. So then when I went to the US for university, it became a bit more complicated when I went to the US, because there just wasn't a pathway to have people in the US university system and competing back at Rowing Ireland. And that's kind of where the complications lay for me. And then from that, that's when it was easier at that point to row for GB, because there was that communication from the US. There was still kind of, I think this was back like 2016, 2017. There was still kind of a bit, many people that went out there competed at that point. And it was a bit of a thing about, will you ever come home when you go out to the States? Do you ever come back to represent your country? And that's kind of why I think now it's so nice to see so many kids from Ireland going to the States and having that kind of like, and seeing people come back and represent their country. Because when I was there, it was really like, there was no path for that. And I was kind of one of the first to go out and do it.
Okay, that's really interesting. So the case was that Rowing Ireland wanted you in Ireland and Team GB were happy enough for you to be in the States.
Yeah, it was that. Like, and it wasn't that Rowing Ireland were like, you have to stay. Like, it was just kind of, listen, we haven't really done this before. And I think it was kind of my choice to then decide whether I wanted to go or not. And for me, going to Princeton, I mean, I watched Gossip Girl growing up, and that's when I realized what really was. It was that kind of vibe where I was, when I went out and visited them, I went, this looks insane, sounds insane. This might not work for me, but I want to go try. And I went out with that kind of like fear, but excitement that maybe the States and that university experience would be something I would enjoy.
100%. So kind of, and it's like, it's something that we now know that Ireland is encouraging in rowing and in a multitude of other sports. Like Dara Lynch, who won a medal last year. Very, very impressive guy. Went to Yale, won an Olympic medal. And his rowing career was definitely not hampered by the fact that he was in the Yale system. And I presume any Ivy League university over there is the same.
It was very similar. Like Dara was the only person that actually went and did it. And then he went away for a bit and then came back a bit later. And that's kind of a perfect example of how it was. He was one of the first as well that went off to a US university and tried to make that comeback. But now that someone's done it and it's happened, it's getting easier for more and more people to do, because you see the return rate and you're like, oh, right, this is actually a really positive thing. And like I said, yeah, it was just at that time, it was just a bit of a grey zone. No one really knew. And now I think the more people are going out, having a good time, coming back, it's becoming a better thing. And like, I'm so keen to get more people to go and do it, because I think the opportunity there, especially being from where we're from, like the Americans, like it's just such an experience. And I think especially like as an Irish person, you can sit there and be like, wow.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
So is it as simple as saying you probably would have represented Ireland at senior level if the rowing setup in Ireland was the same then as it is now in terms of allowing people to do what they want at a US college?
I think it's hard to say because it's, again, like, I don't know what other factors would have come into it. But like I said, I was just reacting how I was at the time. And I can't really answer that, to be honest, and say that it would be that simple for one or the other. But I think my whole journey has been about representing both. And it's sad to say that it's one or the other. Yeah. And I'd never want to be one or the other. And that's what's really sad about this at the same time.
For sure. Like, is that something that's been fostered throughout your life? And I mean that in a rowing specific sense here. Like, we've mentioned Coleraine and Ban Rowing Club. Is there a very deliberate thing that you're now aware of later in life where nationality isn't something that is shoved down people's throats in that rowing club, where there is an understanding with juniors at all ages that when they develop into seniors and hopefully successful seniors, they might then have a decision to make. So we don't want to be leaning one way or the other as a club.
100%. Like, Ban Rowing Club is, from both sides of it, probably in Coleraine, in my opinion, like such a hub for cross community. And there's not that it leads one way or the other. And that's why I loved a sport like rowing growing up, because you wouldn't like go, like some sports you can look at and be like, oh, maybe that's more of an Irish setup or more of a British setup. But rowing was such like a 50-50. And it was all just always about the sport. And the beautiful thing as well was it wasn't a school sport for me. So then it was always club based. And it meant that every kid from any school in the area would come down and join. So it gave you a real mix of friends, which I don't think, in terms of like the separated schooling system, is actually noticed enough. And I think sport is one of the things that brings us together. And that's why club rowing, in my opinion, is so important in Northern Ireland to allow for those places. And like, there's not many sports there that offer that in club level. I don't know.
Yeah. Forgive my ignorance here. So is the common lived experience for someone in Coleraine that their education would be separate? By and large, you would go to either a Catholic or a Protestant school for the duration, all the way up to and including A-levels. Oh. And then outside of that, it's your sport that actually brings people from different communities together.
I mean, I don't want to speak on people's behalf, but that's pretty much, there still is segregation in schools. And schools are becoming a lot more mixed compared to the past, I think, anyway. Like, I was at a Protestant school growing up, but then for my A-levels, I really wanted to study economics. So I went to the local Catholic school every day. And even having that experience was really interesting, because like going in this uniform, it was like, who's she? And having that happen, and I don't know, I didn't think it was going to be weird. But then I realized when I was there, I was like, actually, there's so many parts of this that are clunky and they shouldn't be, because we're all just studying and trying to go to uni and like A levels. Like, it's not that deep. But yeah, it's definitely a little bit like that. And I think having like that, like I said, those clubs and those places and towns where it's for everyone is just so important. Yeah. And that's what's beautiful about the sport.
And also the religious aspect is probably becoming less important the further we move into modernity. Like, I don't suspect you rock up to the Catholic school and say, I want to study economics. And they're like, we'll give you economics if you just renounce your Protestantism to us.
Oh, well, actually, they were like, there was a few times I had to go to mass. But I actually loved it. I think it's so beautiful. Like, it was, for me, if I'm going into that environment, I'm part of it. Like, you're embracing it. And that was kind of the thing I'm like, of course. And like, I don't know. I just think that it was something that I loved. And like, actually, I think the whole school, I was like, kind of like, I want to move here. I love it here. But yeah, it was just one of my experiences growing up that was just a bit different, I think, from most. And just in terms of the schooling systems, it's not something that everyone gets to experience in terms of going into a different school and kind of maybe just the sort of differences between.
You say in the video as well, not being able to see if somebody is British or Irish, and that's not important to you because sport, rowing is a thing that unites you. What about existing in circles? I'm not sure if this has been something you've experienced too much within the sport of rowing, but operating in circles where there is a really strong sense of, you know, the union and Britishness, and then also simultaneously a really strong sense of nationalistic Irishness. Is that also part of your identity, the acceptance of those two factors of life in Northern Ireland?
Yeah, 100%. I think that you can be, if you want to be one, you can be one. And if you want to be the other, you can be the other. It's not about everyone being a mixed bag. It's just respecting each other. And I think respecting differing opinions, and that's okay. And we could all exist together. It's not about trying to convert to one or the other or be both. It's just about allowing space for everyone. And that's probably, it's one of the things actually I studied a lot at Princeton, was my dissertation. I did it on the impact of Brexit on Northern Ireland and kind of when they were trying to implement that, and just kind of what that looked like for communities. And in terms of like there's things like generational trauma and things like that. Like, there's so much more than meets the eye in terms of where we are now. And I've actually done a lot of like academic research into it because I do find it very interesting.
Not to delve too deep into your own dissertation, because I'm sure you spent enough time on it over the years. But is there a sense post-Brexit that maybe the idea of Northern Ireland is a little bit stronger because there was a shared idea of this is going to be bad for us. This is going to be bad for people who identify as Irish. This is going to be bad for a lot of the people who identify as British. Or what was the result of that?
The results were interesting in the sense of, it's a theory that was used called hauntology that we see a lot in drama, where there's kind of the idea of like a ghost haunting a character. And it was kind of being applied across Northern Ireland in terms of the impact of the Troubles on the new, on a new generation. And I studied like my generation and how we felt the impact. And I think a lot of people would just look at people born the Good Friday Agreement and think, oh yeah, like they're kind of like they're almost like not like experience. If they haven't experienced the Troubles, they're not part of it. But it's actually the opposite, because we've been brought up in like kind of a ghosted time where there's been an unconscious divide in our communities and we don't fully understand it, but it's still there. And then with that, how that had the impact on Brexit is definitely, it was something that I was a bit more like, oh, this is impacting us a lot more than meets the eye, is essentially what the conclusion was. And there was kind of solutions on how to fix it. And not that I wanted this to be the conclusion, considering I'm a professional sports person, but the conclusion was club sport and sport. That's kind of why I harp on about it a lot now, because I've done the research on it. And it's not in schools. It's not really with family. It's with the idea of sharing experiences that respect each other. And that's kind of why sport is so important and why I feel so passionate about speaking about like all sports that bring people together. It's not about the identity. It's more about that shared experience at some point.
So what you said in there about the gap maybe between the post Good Friday babies and the pre-Good Friday babies. Is there also a sense of snobbery or dismissal of your experience because you don't remember 1998?
Yeah, maybe that's kind of maybe what the assumption has been, is that, oh, because it was post, they don't have a recollection of it. But the reality is that there's post-generational trauma, which is coming through a generation and it's passing on to the next generation. And that is impacting that the new generation socially in a different way.
Because I would imagine, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong here, there might be a sense that your identity as somebody of Northern Ireland, from Northern Ireland, can be dismissed on both sides of the divide by people who feel abundantly British and abundantly Irish, because to, I guess, give them their credit and to kind of look at things from their point of view, it's a very black and white situation. Whereas when they try and assess the grey area, that's where the confusion comes in, and that's maybe where dismissal of your situation comes in.
Yeah, maybe. But like, it's just part of respecting all of it. And it's something that's happened. You can't dismiss it. Like, the past is the past and it's there, but it's how we work and move forward with it and don't almost ignore it and pretend it didn't happen and just pretend that everything from that point forward is like clear and crystal clear for us to look at. There's completely different elements and areas for experiences to live, and we have to respect it all.
Where does the flag then sit in your consciousness when, as a junior, you're draped in a tricolour and as a senior, you're draped in a Union Jack? We know from Rory McIlroy, it's a very evidently uncomfortable thing that he has to deal with. We saw it last year when himself and Shane Lowry celebrated together, and Lowry was more than happy to be draped in the tricolour, and Rory was trying to, you know, edge away from that a small bit. What's your level of comfort like in those situations?
I think I've actually taken not a lot of comfort from watching Rory McIlroy, and kind of I find myself actually trying to read up a lot on what he said about it, because I think what's good now is that in Northern Ireland, we have loads of athletes representing Ireland and Great Britain. But even from my reel and the social media post, there are a lot of athletes from Ireland and from Great Britain representing both from Northern Ireland felt the same. And for me to say, what flag am I think that kind of sits with Rory, where it's, I don't want to be part of this in terms of like trying to choose and get a judgment from it. It's not about that. It's about the sport. And it's just about trying to do our performance well and represent my whole community. And again, that's kind of where I understand it from that point of view. And there's even articles of Rory McIlroy pulled out, I think it was it 2020 or 2016, the Olympics, because he didn't want to pick a flag, because he doesn't feel that it's appropriate. And people might look at that and think it's fear, but I think it's trying to be respectful at the same time of both. And I don't know, that's kind of, I understand it. And I think the more athletes going through it and like the more success we're seeing in the north part of Ireland, I think it's interesting to see how many more athletes are now having to communicate, decide, make these decisions and talk about it. And like I said, getting like Reese McClenaghan commenting underneath my reel and like Aisha from to the goalie for Ireland hockey, like having those people comment, being like, Han, I feel exactly the same way. I'm like, that was the bit that I felt like, okay, this meant something. Like, it's not just my side is representing Great Britain. Like, it's both. And that's really important.
And it's such a good point that you make at the very start of this chat as well, that quite often, probably most often, it's the sports people that have to deal with this. And you bring up Reese McClenaghan there, and the Commonwealth Games scenario of 2022 is a brilliant example, where the Northern Ireland gymnasts were temporarily not able to compete in it because of whatever, some sort of administrative issue. It's 3 years ago. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact details at the top of my mind.
No, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
But it's kind of mad that Reese is the face of that debate, that it's playing out through gymnastics.
Yeah, it's everywhere, and that's the thing. And it's also a topic like we're discussing, where like maybe a while ago I would have been like, oh, am I comfortable talking about this? Because again, you say the wrong thing or you do the wrong thing. And I hopefully so far haven't said anything that is outrageous or someone wants to have a go at me for, but it's not about that. I'm just like, it's just meant to be a conversation and talking about it more. And like you said, these athletes, like, we're all experiencing it in different ways.
Do you feel people on eggshells around you talking about this?
It's interesting because I actually, a lot of people ask my friends about it,
right?
Like, why when represents Great Britain, like, what's the choice there? And it never comes to me, but it comes to the people around me, because maybe people are walking on eggshells a little bit. And also at the end of the day, it depends how much you care. It depends why you want to know. And like if it's about what I've done and what I've achieved and my results, or is it about how I've got there? Like, and I'm an open book. Like, if anyone asks me, like you're asking me, I will tell them. And it's just, I find it interesting that it's coming from the people around me rather than to me.
Just a final one on this, the pride you would have felt, you know, representing Northern Ireland, say, at Paris, even like there was, I think probably Belfast Telegraph would have had like an updated sort of list of athletes from the North who've done very, very well at the Olympics. So you would have been in there, but Daniel Whiffen would have been in there as well, representing Ireland. So Northern Ireland, if we take them, the people from the North, as kind of like their own medal table last year, it would have been absolutely outrageously successful, the best ever. And you would have been the first female since Mary Peters to win a gold medal, the first female from Northern Ireland since Mary Peters to win a gold medal. Is that a particular moment of pride for you, that this sort of intangible thing that's not actually listed on the official medals table, but is a big part of your identity?
I think growing up, and knowing just even as a whole, like how scarce gold medals are, I always had this dream of winning one. And to now say I have one and that has happened for me, I feel so, so incredibly lucky. Like, I know how hard I've worked, but at the same time, it's still a pinch me thing to have one and have that happen. And especially with the other athletes around me as well. Like, we in Northern Ireland hadn't seen a gold medal for 52 years, and then four come along at once, and all from different, like Ireland and Great Britain. I think that's really cool. Like, and I think that shows as a country how far it is coming, that there's success there that's been celebrated on both sides. And even we had like a homecoming after, and we had every athlete from Ireland and Great Britain list on a stage in Belfast in like the post Olympics kind of celebrations for a concert for all of us. And it's probably one of the most unique post-Olympic celebrations there is in the world, to have that kind of thing going on. But I look back on it, I'm like, at the time we all probably didn't talk to each other about this, but it was very, very unique. And now I reflect, I'm like, that's an interesting experience to have had post-games. And even coming back to Coleraine was such a huge moment for me, because I've never seen Coleraine High Street so busy. Like, there was thousands of people out there, and I've never seen that before in my life. Well, actually, the last time was London 2012, when I got inspired by it. Because in Ban Rowing Club, we had Alan Campbell, Richard and Peter Chambers all win medals from the club, and a tiny little club. It was a huge success. And then I watched that and got inspired, and that's why I started rowing in the first place. So then to have the full circle moment where I come back to Coleraine and the streets are lined. I think, honestly, all over Ireland, I kept seeing it for all the Olympians, and I didn't see that anywhere else. And I think that was so special. It shows the community we're part of, and like how we all like exist together and grew up together, and how much that means to everyone else as well as us.
It's amazing. It really is. It's also amazing that this is, you know, the headline around you at the moment, and, you know, the clearly top of the agenda. And we spent half an hour speaking about this in an interview with you, when there's so many more interesting things going on in your life as well. Like, the last year, or ever since Paris, has been pretty wild for you. So you might talk us through this. So you win a silver medal this year in the World Championships, but this was not a year where you just went back into the water and just did the same things again. You had to battle against your own body over the last 12, 18 months. Talk us through this, Anna. What have you been going through?
Yeah. I've had a lot of like injuries and illnesses in my career, but this one that I had last year actually started before the Olympics. So it's called POTS. And for anyone that doesn't know what POTS is, it's basically your nervous system, it's kind of wrecked. And I got ill. I think I got COVID. And post that, every time I would stand up, I couldn't get blood to my head. I couldn't pump blood around my body. I was extremely fatigued to the point I couldn't get out of bed. And this happened to me December of Olympic year. And I got ill, and then they kind of thought it was post-viral fatigue. And then I couldn't get out of it, and I couldn't train. I couldn't get out of bed. And I went to see numerous doctors trying to get it sorted on Olympic year. Like, you don't want that. You want to be training. And eventually I got to one that's like, you've got POTS. And POTS is one of those things that you exist with your whole life. And I have to be careful when I talk about this, because obviously I'm sitting here as a professional athlete talking about POTS, and some people still can't get out of bed with it. It's that debilitating. But it's something that with exercise, it actually helps. And basically what happened was I had to do a lot of lying down exercise, a lot of cycling, up my salt intake, get my blood thicker to help retrain my body to pump blood around it again, and get myself back in time for the Paris Olympics, which I managed to, and get back in the boat and obviously go to the games, and it was successful. But I didn't speak about it at the time, because the last thing you want to do is talk to the media about that type of illness, because even if your competitors and stuff hear about it, I just kept it very quiet. And then it happened again this year. I thought it was like a thing where like maybe it was triggered by a really bad bout of COVID and maybe my symptoms come down again and it can kind of stay that way. But I got ill again in April 2025 and the same thing happened, and the fatigue starts, can't get out of bed. And I think every time I've had a really bad bout of illness, I get these really heightened symptoms that honestly make me the opposite of an athlete. I don't know how I do it when I'm in that state. And I've had to learn how to manage that. I'm seeing doctors to how to prevent it and just kind of taken day by day. But it's something that I've never had before until, like I said, pre-Paris. And it's been managing and seeing how it goes.
So is it something that you have to deal with every single day, or is it only when you have a little bit of an illness?
It depends. And that's what we're trying to figure out with doctors at the minute in terms of symptom levels. I think they think I have it low lying, where it doesn't stop me in terms of like being able to row and exercise. Exercise helps it in terms of moving blood around the body, but illness can tip me over the edge into like extreme symptoms. And it's interesting, just the exercise seems to help this. And that's one of the main things. Like, I think astronauts are really, they're quite common in getting it. And that's what I've been told by a doctor recently. And because of that, they're recommended to exercise a lot to make their heart bigger and blah, blah, blah. So Okay. Yeah, I've had lots. And I've also had then a ton of rib injuries in my past, which I speak a lot about now in terms of underfueling and trying to get women just to understand the importance of carbohydrates and red S and all those things as well. So I've had a good little trough in my journey, and I've come out the opposite side of it. So
Okay. How do you mean the rib injuries were caused by your diet? I presume just that the bone structure was weakened by not getting enough into you?
Yeah, I in my career up until 2023 had probably broken about 10 ribs over a course of like 5 years.
Wow.
Obviously, or like rowing is non-impact, like you're not touching each other. It was just through repetitive motion. And I kind of thought at the time that was normal. And a lot of rib injuries in rowing are a lot of women will get them. And basically I, over time, was getting more and more, they're becoming more and more frequent. And long story short, they took me for a bone scan and they realized my bone density had me in osteopenia. And from that, I had to work with a nutritionist, up my carbohydrate intake, because I was in a low energy availability, and just get myself back up and running whilst trying to keep training. It wasn't caused by something of like trying to diet. It was just caused by, in rowing, we should be eating about 6,000 calories a day, and I was maybe eating 5,000. So I was still eating a lot, but just that kind of deficit really was impacting me. And yeah, it caused me damage. And thankfully now I've reversed it. So
was that just down to a lack of knowing your own body, getting your macros wrong or whatever?
Yeah, lack of knowledge, to be honest. Lack of understanding the danger of, like, when I was at uni, I'd get up in the morning, I'd go straight down to the boathouse and row. And it was kind of like, because the dining halls weren't open and it's fasted training, kind of those things where like it's kind of promoted on Instagram, it's promoted in social media. I just think it's the worst thing in the world now, and I would never dare do it. So yeah.
There's maybe some sports you could do a bit of training on fasted. Rowing, I would not suspect, is one of those at all. Like, you're talking about one of the hardest sports in the world. And then also, I presume you've felt the pain of a broken rib while being in the boat. I couldn't think of anything worse or more debilitating in a boat than having your lungs going at a rate of knots and having broken ribs to deal with.
I actually raced on one where I was at Henley Royal Regatta, which is quite a famous regatta. It's all higgledy-piggledy, and everyone in world rowing, it's quite a famous one to come compete at. And I was in the women's single scull there and was racing down the track. And another symptom of low energy availability is like fatigue and tiredness. And I was just that day telling my coach, I'm really tired. Like, I don't really know what's wrong. I'll take some caffeine, it'll be fine. And I went down the track that day, and I think that day I cracked 2 ribs. From just rowing. And because I went and got a bone scan and a MRI 2 days after that race, because I just knew something was wrong. Like, my shoulder was getting really tight. But it's amazing that I look back and I'm like, how did I ever go through that? I don't know. But it was one of those things that just, I think when you're in a sport where you're constantly pushing yourself, you sometimes feel to just stop and reflect and go, is this right? And yeah, something I had to learn the hard way. And thank goodness I have a good support team and medical team behind me to get me back on track and get me back on for the Olympics. But yeah, it was definitely one of those journeys that I had to go through.
That's absolutely remarkable. And to do this without the validation of having an Olympic gold medal as well. Obviously, you've achieved so much prior to Paris, but not knowing if you can actually be a gold medalist, for sure, that takes serious motivation. At least now you have that, and touch wood, you don't have to deal with anything like that ever again. But even if, say, the pot symptoms come up, at least you know that you've gone through this before, you've been the very best in the world, and that might push you. In the first instance, you don't have that motivation or that validation.
You hit the nail on the head with that. I think you're exactly right. It was those moments where like the doubts and the reflections come in because you're looking around going, has anyone else dealt with this who's been successful? Like, where does my like motivation and sanity come from that this is okay and this will be okay? And I definitely battled with that a lot of like, it became kind of a bit of compartmentalizing those things and I became quite good at it. Like when I got injured, it was kind of, okay, right, that's happened, let's go. And really it's the mental side of that in sport that people forget about with injury, of trying to like being able to have that injury, learn from it, but also move on from it and not let that impact your next performance. And you're so right in that I had no idea if I would even get a gold medal and it was just the dream I was chasing. And like, that was the biggest thing for me was, would I be able to do it with all these setbacks?
Incredible. Incredible stuff, Hannah. What is next for you? You've already outlined the Christmas plans. I presume doing the very boring things to a world-class level is what 2026 looks like.
Next, we've got the World Championships in Amsterdam in 2026, which will be so fun. I'm really excited about that. We've got a World Cup series running from May through to August as well, with venues being Seville, Italy, lots of nice European venues this year for some racing. And then the big goal is obviously LA 2028 in the US again. And yeah, it's interesting for rowing actually, because it's changing distance.
Yeah.
From 2000 meters down to 1500 meters, which is going to completely change the game. And it's going to be, I think, quite a mental battle as well as physical, just purely because it's only for the Olympics. So yeah. It's going to be just throwing everything up in the air and see what comes.
Absolutely. Well, very best of luck with all of that. And enjoy the time home in Coleraine over the course of the winter. Hopefully they don't manage to guilt you into getting into a boat on the ban at any stage over Christmas.
But, you might see me once, yeah. But we'll see.
Hannah Scott, great to chat to you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Off the Ball Daily.